It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Jason Kelly. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Bloomberg Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio.
We are here in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's the NBA Tech Summit. It is buzzing out there. We found a quiet corner to catch up with David Blitzer. He wears a couple different hats, co-owner of the 76ers, among other teams. We're focused on the 76ers just because we're talking NBA, but also you got a big job at Blackstone running TACOP. So let's start talking about basketball. First of all, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Nice to be here. Thanks, Jason, Kara.
All right, so the NBA today, technology. Help us understand how it has changed the game from an owner's perspective.
Well, first again, thanks for having me on. It's incredible to be here. The Tech Summit and the overall All-Star Weekend is always so much fun. And if you think about the Tech Summit, and I know you've seen a lot of different people today in terms of, you know, the convergence of what's happening between what's happening with the players on the court, what's happening with them off of the court, and their engagement with their global fan base has absolutely just completely exploded in the age of social media. And there's been a lot of interesting commentary, even at some of the sessions this morning, about how much that has changed and how quickly, et cetera. But I'll just say from my perspective in watching this connection, I would say over the past, I mean, each year grows so dramatically. There's no doubt. And we have some very colorful players that really, really seem to dominate social media as well as on the court. So it's fun to sort of watch that engagement. But it's, you know, it's just gone strength to strength. And if you look at the global nature of the game, mm-hmm. how that couples with the incredible performance and athleticism with what's on the court, and frankly, it's giving folks at home and around the world what they want.
It does feel like the league and the owners, for the most part, have not just sort of allowed this to happen, but enabled it to happen.
Absolutely.
How and why?
Well, look, I think Adam Silver and the entire management team at the NBA is incredible, okay? And I think they saw this, and they saw it early, and they saw that the connection that could be made between the league and the players with the fan base, given what was going on from a distribution standpoint in terms of how people were consuming media, are consuming media, and where, more importantly, where the trend was going, I think they nailed it. And they continue
It's fascinating because this summit's been going on for 20 years, right? A tech summit 20
yep.
years ago. Who would have thought that this is where we'd be kind of be today? And Adam was on it.
Absolutely. I mean, it was funny. I was just talking to one of our partners, Michael Rubin, who was trying to remember. I think he's been on a panel at every summit. He was trying to figure out whether it was 19 years or
yeah.
20 years.
Right.
Again, just ahead of the curve.
How does technology change the business opportunities of owning an NBA team?
I mean, it's changing in so many different ways. You know, I mean, we talked a lot about the social media dynamics and the players' connection with the fan base. And just if you think about some of the content. So I don't know, but it wasn't that long ago where Joel Embiid was literally walking down the street. Okay? and somebody was like talking trash to him on a playground court. So Joel just walks over there, just dunks on the kid, and it just goes completely viral, yeah. right? Literally, globally.
Yeah.
And that wasn't set up. Like, A, that's Joel, and B, that's the dynamic that's out there right now with what the players, et cetera, can do. So that's kind of one area. You obviously, from a new arena and what's going on inside, is incredible from a technology standpoint. If you go out and see the Sacramento Kings' new arena, mm-hmm. and I cannot wait to see the Golden State Warriors' new arena, the technology and the systems that are going in and the engagement that they will have, again, with the fan base is incredible. So, I mean, we're seeing technology change just about everything that we do. I'm talking much more broadly.
Right.
And then we kind of bring it into, you know, the sports scene and particularly here in the NBA. It's great.
Well, and it's also opened up the rest of the world.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, I think the NBA is the most global game.
Yeah.
And again, it continues to go from strength to strength. And we had the opportunity and the pleasure of playing two preseason games in China this year. And I have to tell you that it's amazing. I mean, A, just the excitement that was driving in China. I mean, walking out of our hotel and the people that were around and in the arenas yeah. and just the numbers, because the sheer numbers are so massive. But to think about the ability to connect with that fan in northern China from the court in Philadelphia or Boston or pick your arena, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So the players have gotten big.
In every way.
Exactly. Sometimes it feels like maybe bigger than their teams. It feels like the only analog out there, and this is one you're familiar with because your group also owns a soccer team, Crystal
yes.
Palace. Do players get too big ultimately for their teams? How much do you worry about that in this day and age?
I really don't. The reality is absolutely the players are building their personal brands. And there was an interesting discussion on that today, actually. And I think what the players are able to do, partly it's about building their brands and being able to engage with that fan base. Mm-hmm. And part of it is, in my opinion, being able to talk to the world about things that are really important to them. And it goes well beyond the sport, okay? So, you know, things of a charitable nature and things that relate to, you know, causes that they're incredibly focused on, and the ability for the fans, and forget just basketball fans, I just mean, you know, to engage and understand. Like Magic Johnson was talking a little bit about what it's like today as a player
yeah.
versus when he was growing up. And I was a huge Magic Johnson fan. I tried to learn everything I could about Magic Johnson, and the amount of information that I had in the 80s on Magic Johnson versus the amount of information I have today on LeBron James is radically different, right? And so people's ability to really understand the player and what's important to them off the court as much as on the court, I think is really amazing.
All right, we got to
talk markets.
We got to talk a little Blackstone, little markets.
Sure.
It is your day job, after all.
Day and night job.
Steve Schwartzman and John Gray, you know, they do pay you to do this. What do you look at from a market perspective? What do you see out there? And I'm especially interested in what you see in Europe because you worked there for a while.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Brexit just for a second.
Sure.
Are you a buyer in the UK and Europe right now?
Well, look, A, we have significant investments in the UK, and we're very comfortable with the businesses that we're invested in the UK. I don't think any of us know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know, pull up some odds, and everybody's got a slightly different view.
But there are depressed values there, right, to present
an
opportunity?
Not quite yet. No. I actually think that things will work themselves through.
Yeah.
I do, and I think the UK is very resilient. It's a great market, economy, et cetera. But it's bumpy, okay? And there are going to be times where I think, from just a valuation standpoint, where you might be wanting to jump in different asset classes or industries relative to them having traded down quite dramatically. I don't feel like that's necessarily the case right now. Things
okay.
are down a bit, but not dramatically. And so we're looking closely.
You are looking closely.
What Absolutely.
About, where are we in the United States? I think we're all trying to
we're
figure
great,
out.
Well, I think economically, from a macro perspective, I think we're in a very good place. I think the reality is we continue to see strong growth.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we can all debate exactly on interest rates, but things feel, you know, quite calm right now in terms of that cost of capital and policy from that standpoint. And we see earnings growth across all of our companies. they're doing very well. Yeah. One of the things that we spend a lot of time thinking about really are, A, looking around corners, like what aren't we seeing, right, that can come up. We spend a lot of time thinking about inflation and wage growth and, you know, the ability to have pricing power in a variety of different businesses and a variety
inflation,
of different industries.
David, inflation becoming more of a problem?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Do you guys, yeah, go ahead.
If you think about the fourth quarter of last year as rates were starting to move up and what the effects that might have as it relates to inflation, that effect on a variety of industries broadly and then obviously specific companies is something we spend a lot of time thinking about.
So running tech ops, the world is kind of your oyster. I mean, this is like the coolest job in investing in many people's minds because you have this huge arsenal that you can put to work, more patient capital. Give us an idea of where some semblance of a majority of that capital is going at this point. What sorts of opportunities are out there? Because you can be, as the name says, tactical.
And right. Are there a lot right now?
There are. It's not, I mean, look, the investment environment, we could go, we don't have enough time to go through all of the different areas. You know, we have an amazing business in the sense that we really can play across everything, industry-wise, capital structure-wise, geography-wise, within our business. And then obviously, there are different points in time where different subsectors, et cetera, are super attractive to us. That could be for value, just purely valuation reasons, and it could also be for where we think those industries are going. So as an example, we spend a ton of time in the telecom space. And so spectrum and towers and data centers and fiber. And none of that is like dramatic, right? We all know what's happening in terms of data explosion and how people are utilizing and, you know, their devices in everyday life. So we all know that the growth is there, but the ability for us to find different investments within that space across the globe has been a ton of fun. But I'd say the biggest thing that we're doing right now is probably structured equity. Huh. So we're going in equity situations where we're helping companies grow, and that can be organically, it can be an M&A strategy, it can be a variety of things, but they need our capital and our partnership to achieve their goals. But we're generally going in above the common equity and below some, you know, level of debt capital. We're kind of that middle capital layer, and we think that's a terrific place to be.
30 seconds left. Biggest single opportunity beyond what you've said in 2019 globally?
Wow. We're spending a ton of time looking at technology and what it is doing to businesses where we can be offensive. Of course, we think about it defensive. Where we can be offensive to think about the tech disruption and what we can do with many of our businesses to drive that future growth. And frankly, in some cases, the business models are changing in front of our eyes.
And again, you're finding opportunities a fair amount there.
We are.
With good valuations?
Decent valuations.
Well said. David Blitzer, thank you so much. Really
Great.
Appreciate it. David Blitzer of
Thanks,
Blackstone,
Carol.
Of
Thanks,
course,
Jason.
The 76ers. This is Bloomberg.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly on Bloomberg Radio.
So from NBA player Jason to team owner and more, Grant Hill, he has done it all. NBA Hall of Famer, NBA All-Star, Vice Chair co-owner of the Atlanta Hawks, and he talked with us on creating a better experience for the NBA fan.
Here he is.
Particularly in Atlanta, in our market, where most of our customers, our fans, are millennials. And so how do you attract, how do you talk to that target audience? And so we recently went through an arena renovation. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we noticed is that, with technology, millennials are obviously very much engaged, very much, digital currency is their thing. And so whereas before, maybe you'd go on your mobile device and check your emails during a game or maybe check the scores, now you're so much into uploading your experience. That's what millennials, I'm not a millennial, I do that sometimes too.
We all do.
But I mean, that's how we live now, and that's how technology has disrupted our industry in sports. So increasing the bandwidth in our arena to accommodate that, so right. It can be a pleasurable experience. That's just sort of one of many examples, I think, that we've tried to sort of introduce in terms of providing and speaking to and creating a wonderful in-game experience. At the end of the day, we're all trying to get people off their phones, out of their homes, and into our building. And so what can we do to attract those type of customers? And so
Mark Cuban was just talking about it on a panel, and he said, when you're at a game too, though, you don't want people looking down, right? You want them engaged in the game, so it's like this balance.
Right, it is a balance, because one, you want to, so if you go to a game, I think you can see this at any NBA arena, and I also moonlight do some television and broadcast games, and so when the game is not going on and there's a timeout or a stoppage of play, there's music, there's skits on the court, so it's constantly being stimulated, constantly keeping you engaged, which is important. But we also recognize that not just sharing with those that are there with you, you want to share with your entire network. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be on Instagram, you're going to be on Snapchat, you're going to be, to all your friends, whether that's 20 or 20,000.
Yeah.
And that's part of how we live. And so we have to adapt and adjust and accommodate. And that's what we try to do.
So another group that has certainly embraced technology are NBA players. I mean, you have these mega brands, maybe bigger than in any other sport. It feels like the NBA and a lot of the owners have enabled that, maybe with a little bit of a gimlet eye toward, we don't know how this is going to go. How do you guys think about players, social media, and these brands that they're building using tech?
Well, I mean, I think we're, as a league, I think it starts with Adam Silver. I mean, we Technology Summit. This has been his baby for 20 years, and it's grown and it's evolved. But I think, first of all, just the league in itself and how the league markets its players, you see our faces. It's more about the individual necessarily than the team. Mm. And so LeBron James or Chris Paul or James Harden, as a fan, you feel like you know them. You feel like, Michael Jordan, long before the technology boom, he was well known and recognized all over the world. And so this only magnifies that. And the league has really embraced technology and used it to spread and its message, but also grow its business. And so, yeah, to have players now understand that they can speak directly to an audience, to their fans, I also think it encourages them and sort of contributes to their desire to speak out on things and social injustices, and we've seen that in our league. And
what's the balance there? Because, we talk about that a lot in terms of you guys have an amazing platform through your players, through your owners, through your viewers. And I just wonder, when you think about social activism and all of the things that are going on, whether it's politically or just within our world at large, what's your responsibility as an owner?
Well, I mean, as an owner, you want to be informed, and obviously you want to be authentic, and you want to, look, I work with Tony Ressler, who's our managing partner, and there have been things that have happened, in society during the course of our ownership, and one of the things that we discussed, look, it's okay. Like, you know, speak from the heart, but just, you know, obviously want to make sure you're informed and educated. And that goes for the players as well. The great thing, though, about technology, unlike 25, 30 years ago, now you have access to information. So when I played in Detroit, if something happened in Cleveland, I might not know about it. I might not be aware. Yeah. But now, instantaneously, you can find out, and you have the ability to really learn and form an opinion and a thought. And so whether you're a player or an owner, you just want to be responsible. I've done that. I'm on social media. I've spoken out. You can go on my page and know how I feel about everything.
Yeah.
But it is a balance, because we also understand that we have customers who don't necessarily agree with that. Mm-hmm. You want to be cognizant of that. You want to be aware of that. But through it all, I do think sports is beautiful in that you can have different sides of the aisle who may not agree on anything in life, but they're going to come to an Atlanta Hawks game and support and cheer and be totally vested in that team. And when you win and you go through a championship experience, it's magical. It can bring people together. So I do think sports can play a role
in
healing in a lot of ways.
Single biggest thing that's changed for players today since you were a player?
Wow. So I think one of the big things, and as it applies to me, is there's such an emphasis now on rest, on recovery, and that's not the biggest thing, but, you know, obviously I had a lot of injuries throughout my career. And
do you feel like if you had had more rest back then, that you wouldn't have had so many injuries?
Yeah, there was a school of thought back in the day that, you know, you play through anything.
Yeah.
And you know what, you're hurt, you just tape it up and go.
Yeah.
And now I think as an organization, as owners, as a basketball operations department, you know, you think big picture. And you'd rather rest, you know, take a week off. I know a lot of the old heads like me resent that, but I think it's really a good thing. And because there's always this pressure to play, and players put that on themselves. And sometimes we need controls in place to protect the player from themselves. And so I wish I had that. I wish that I was in that environment that maybe I could have avoided a lot of the injuries I went through.
And that was Grant Hill, of course, vice chair, co-owner of the Atlanta Hawks, former NBA Hall of Famer and NBA All-Star. And I thought it was interesting what he said about injuries, because really in some of his later years, he had a ton of injuries that sidelined him. And he said now, you know, there's a lot more awareness in terms of how much a player is playing out on the court, and kind of taking care of their health has become very important.
I also found so fascinating what he said about the ownership's decision, I think very much in the spirit of what they're hearing from the commissioner and from the league, essentially saying to players, feel free to be out there, be smart, be informed, which I have to say, very different from what we hear from other leagues, and most notably the NFL, which has not been consistent on that. The owners have not been consistent, but every single owner we talk to today,
activism, they're taking a stand.
They are essentially saying, look, we got to get behind it. Like, we can either sort of get behind this or it's going to happen without us, and we might as well get involved and be proactive. So I think that's a really important point that we heard consistently, and you're going to hear more of that in the conversations we have coming up.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly on Bloomberg Radio.
Down here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And Carol, we kicked off the day with Amy Brooks. She's the president of a very specific and important division of the NBA. She's also the chief innovation officer. So she understands the whole scope of the enterprise. It's global and it is tech savvy. Take a listen.
It's exciting for us because only 1% of our fans globally will ever come to a game. So we have to embrace
1%.
Technology. 1%. As such a global sport, our games are here, and so we have to embrace technology. We're very fortunate because our players embrace social media, and they are great global brands amongst themselves. And so we do everything we can to capture the emotion around the game and send it out globally.
The NBA has done a phenomenal job with developing those brands and kind of giving the players, it feels like, a little bit of space. How do you balance that? Because you've got some big personalities, and as you say, with a massive social media footprint in a lot of cases.
Absolutely. I mean, we see our games on TV as meals and social media and all of the content as snacks. So our players are out there developing content. Our teams are developing content, and we, the league, are developing content. So we have 1.5 billion followers amongst players, teams, and the league. And our job is just engage fans globally in every way we can, and different platforms, and testing and learning is a big part of that.
But where's the most growth? Because, like, we talk about esports a lot, and I think they talk about it being like a $1 billion business by 2020. Where's the biggest growth?
Well, we see esports as a great way, again, going back to the global opportunity to engage our fans. We see the potential of having an esports team internationally, and that's much harder to do with the NBA. So we see that as a fantastic opportunity.
You've got a lot of owners who come out, and I think we're living in such a political, social activist world. How do you balance letting players and owners of teams express their opinions or help kind of balance those situations with also kind of managing a huge industry in a league?
Yeah, it's important to give players and owners, but especially our players, a platform by which they can use their voice and speak out at whatever cause is important to them. We want to make sure they feel supported. Obviously, diversity is a core value of the NBA, and we really want to embrace our players and enable them to freely speak.
Talk about the WNBA and sort of the opportunities there, how it fits in, where you see the most growth.
Yeah, it's important to me, especially as a woman that work for a league that embraces not just diversity of our players in the NBA, but we have our own women's professional league. And we see tremendous potential for this. It's a league that's been around for over 20 years, but we think that in today's society, it's really prime for capturing a new audience as well, for people who care about progressive women and what women are doing, not just on the court, but off the court.
What are the other different methods that you guys are embracing in terms of getting the brands out there? And I think about, was it a couple of years, started doing kind of sponsor logos on uniforms? And so, like, where does this all go?
Yeah, so we call it the Jersey Patch, and we launched this for the first time last season. We now have 29 teams that have a partner on their jersey, and we've been tremendously pleased with this program because we didn't know who was going to come, how this is going to work, and we now have two-thirds of these partners are brand new to the NBA. We have some fantastic brands like Disney, GE, Harley Davidson, and also endemic brands to that team and that city. Most of these companies are based locally in those markets, but they're global brands.
So when you think about technology, one of the elements that comes to the fore is gambling. It is in a totally different environment now, post the decision last year by the Supreme Court. What's the strategy as this sort of starts to set in for the NBA?
Yeah, obviously, first and foremost is integrity as this comes. But it's happening already. We just want to embrace it and make sure it's regulated in the right way. But for us, we see engagement as the opportunity. Data shows that when people bet or do fantasy gaming, they watch for three times as long. So for us, that's a great opportunity to make our game more unique, more engaging for fans.
Data, you mentioned data, and I feel like every industry that we talk about nowadays is, you know, pulling in a lot of data, trying to figure out how to make it useful. How do you guys put data to work in the NBA?
Yeah, for us to know personal things about fans so we can segment and target is important. And at the league, we're very fortunate to see across all of our fans as well. And so we want to be able to enable teams to reach the person, right person with the right message at the right time. So it's a big priority for us in learning as much as we can about our fans. We talked about our global fans as well, because we see a day where we can offer targeted products.
Personalized
and targeted products to fans in different countries. You know, we have 108 international players this year from 42 countries. How can we utilize that strength, that global strength of the NBA, to deliver a fan in France something that's much more customized to them?
That's Amy Brooks. She's the Chief Innovation Officer over at the NBA, based in New York. Down here, obviously, this is sort of her jam, technology being at the center of the conversation. And I have to say, you know, one thing that became very clear over the course of that conversation and other conversations we've had, we've sort of been beating this drum, the NBA really got out ahead of everybody else when it comes to technology. Now, let's be fair, it's a very friendly game to that in some ways.
That's
true. It's more contained. It's very intimate. You know, the arenas are such that you can probably build them out in a little bit more of a tech-friendly way. You're not talking about these, you know, 70,000-seat behemoths that house the NFL games, but some smart stuff.
Right, and it's interesting, though, when we talk about, you know, consumers overall, there's so much competing for their time, but the NBA seems to be doing well, growing their audiences. And I thought, in terms of growing their audiences, they think of this sport, it's global, right? And they're playing games overseas, and they're growing the folks that are, you know, tracking the games.
We also didn't get into this, but I certainly would peg Amy Brooks as one to watch. You know, former player, walk-on, I believe, at Stanford, went to Stanford Business School.
She was a walk-on at Stanford.
She has been a powerhouse at the NBA. So you wonder, you know, maybe she's a contender for the top job post Adam Silver. You wonder if she goes on to do something else. She, of course, made no indication of that. This is purely
something
my speculation.
You want to tell us, Jason?
No, purely my speculation that, you know, this sort of experience is really interesting in the broader world, especially as we think about new leagues sprouting up all over the place, whether it's in football, lacrosse, or anywhere else. Anyway, that was Amy Brooks.
She's got a lot of moving parts.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly on Bloomberg Radio.
Got a great conversation with, he is truly a super agent, Rich Paul, founder and CEO at Clutch Sports Group. He represents LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and more. Check out what he had to say.
You work with some of the biggest names in basketball, and we are at a time where the players are massive brands unto themselves. How do you balance the needs of a player, your clients, and the needs of a team in the modern NBA?
For us, it's very simple. You know, the game is everything for us, and that's what we focus on. So we try to educate the new players coming into the league and their families to have a very realistic evaluation of what's actually available to them. This whole notion of marketing, people sell that because in their mind, this is what families want to hear. This is what kids want to see. You always dream of having your face on TV. And I tell people all the time, there's no brand out there that's going to pay you $200 million, but your team will. So if it's about, what is it about? It's about notoriety. If it's about notoriety, then let's just buy billboards around the city you're playing in, put your face up there, and let's focus on the game. Because the game is everything. It's going to bring forth everything. And so 9 times out of 10, when you get drafted to a team, the it player is already there.
Right.
He's the player. And so coming in, you're not going to have the opportunities available to you that you may think or that your family may think. But if your game grows, take Steph Curry, for instance. Steph Curry, game, evolve, year 7, MVP, champion, his business grew. That's how that works, you know. Everybody can't be LeBron coming in a time where he had a $100 million contract to start and he had deals to start. But that's timing. Think of where the game of basketball was at then. Think about the guys that the game of basketball lost. He was his new guy. Social media hurts opportunities because everyone's a personality today. So I just saw Jalen Rose and Stephen A. Smith on a McDonald's commercial. Well, 10 years ago, that's an athlete. But now the brands aren't necessarily spending the money on the athlete because they don't need to align with someone who's going to be on TV. Everyone's on TV.
Right.
The smartphone is the new TV, right? So the 3-year partnership of yesterday has became 6 tweets, 2 stories on Instagram today. That's a 6-month deal.
So, Rich, but for somebody like LeBron, right, who is so established, who's put his heart and soul and time into the game, right? I mean, what are the conversations you have with him, though, about his brand? And then how do you play it in this kind of evolved environment?
Well, with LeBron, since we've been young, very young men at a very young age, we've always thought about doing partnerships that align with who he was. You never wanted to get out of that. And if you watch any commercial, most brands that he had partnerships with, you know, was genuine to who he was as a person, what he actually believed in. And every commercial that we did, you know, it normally told some type of story, his story, or there was a message, his message, and it was always true to him, whether it was Samsung, whether it was Nike, whether it was, you know, Sprite,
right.
You know, you've never seen him do something. And even today, I can't get LeBron off his couch for money. Money doesn't move him today. You know, and people, when you say that, people be like, really? Because you got to think, people say, oh, you have LeBron. You know, how are you going to have time to get a deal for me? I'm like, wait a minute. I can't get, LeBron's not moving. Today, time with his family is much more important than being, because one thing you don't understand, when you have partnerships, they don't want days in your season. They can't get them. They want days in your summer. So the more partnerships you have, the less days in your summer that you have. And people don't understand that.
So when LeBron does move, people notice. And you and I were talking before we came on. Anytime he goes anywhere, people notice. He's at the Duke Virginia game. You're at the Duke Virginia game. And all of a sudden it becomes about we're recruiting Zion. We're there for Zion. What's the real story about what happens next in terms of pros and college?
And I think that's good for TV, but the reality is, just love the game. You know, no one talked about when we flew from Cleveland to Detroit and Steph Curry was playing at Davidson. Nobody cared. Why? I wasn't an agent. I wasn't in the position I'm in. Obviously, he wasn't playing in L.A. You know, we're there to see a game. The University of Virginia, its president and Tony Bennett took care of us. Just seeing a basketball game. It wasn't about anybody recruiting anybody, but what happens is people put this in the atmosphere and they just run with it without even making a phone call. It's like, hey, wait a minute. That's not true.
And that was Rich Paul, really one of my favorite conversations of the day, Carol, in part because, as we said, he is in the middle of so much. He obviously also represents, as I believe you mentioned earlier, Anthony Davis. And so he told us a little bit about, you didn't hear that part, but told us about the fact that basically, you know, Anthony Davis was just like putting it out there.
Right, right.
Saying what he wants to do.
Right.
But let me tell you, you watch ESPN, you read any of the sports pages, you listen to the podcast.
I mean, there's so much controversy, right, over the handling of, you know, what was, I think, expected to be a move, and it didn't quite play out that way.
But if there's one thing we know, Rich Paul is in the middle of all of it, and given his relationship with LeBron James and some of the players he represents, including John Wall, who plays for one of our guests coming up, that's Ted Leonsis. Rich Paul in the middle of everything.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly on Bloomberg Radio.
Carol, another guy who is very much in the center of it all, Ted Leonsis, chairman and CEO at Monumental Sports and Entertainment. And what that means is he essentially owns sports in Washington, D.C.
He wears a lot of hats.
He does indeed. And a big investor. We talked to him about owning a team, but also where he's putting his money, where the game is going. Listen in.
We're leaders in esports. I've been been making huge investments in esports. I own Team Liquid with Peter Guber, owns the Golden State Warriors.
How big is that market going to be? We see numbers of about $1 billion in 2020. How big do you
think? It is going to superset all of the leagues in terms of engagement because it started globally. It didn't start in North America or Canada. It's something that started globally. And it's free to get started. I made an investment in Epic and Fortnite, and it's the ultimate, it's the perfect communal game, right? And it's kids getting together and playing a game. They survive on the island, and they're talking with their friends, and it's become a platform.
Did that become bigger than you thought it was? I mean, that has become a juggernaut. Did you anticipate it'd be this big, Fortnite?
Yeah.
Touche.
What is it about Fortnite? Because, I mean, it really has, I think it caught a lot of people off guard. Not you, apparently, but it really came out of nowhere to a lot of people.
Well, the management team, the leadership team of Epic is
just down the road here, right?
Yeah, long time in that industry, and their founder, CEO, really has a good touch with the publishers and the studios and understanding what's going on. But what he was able to do was to make an exchange. I will give you for free a real communal piece of software that will activate friendships, activate viewing. I think it's the first multi-user game that was designed that would be easy to follow. Most of we play in League of Legends, there's Overwatch leagues. Yeah. If you haven't played the game, you're new to it, you just get dropped in front of a television, it's hard to understand what's going on. Fortnite, you can understand, it's bite size, and it's building a platform that's global and worldwide.
Okay, gotta ask you, what did Washington get right, the Washington area get right, that New York got wrong when it comes to Amazon?
I think it was a real communal activity. We made sure that all of the universities worked very, very closely. with what Amazon needed. We made sure that the transportation system was going to be modified to make sure that they came. And it was just a very open and transparent kind of communication. And I don't know what's happened in New York, but I do know that we're thrilled that Amazon is coming, and we'll keep the lights on for them and work very, very closely with them.
One last question. You mentioned some of the investments you've made. What are the things you're investing in? What are the technology and trends that you find interesting that are going to be kind of front and center for all of us in, I don't know, 3, 5, 10 years?
Well, new food. We're surprisingly making lots of investments. There's a company called Sweetgreen that really is kind of, let's say, the McDonald's, but for this generation. And they've used technology on their value chain and how they order and how they are able to serve up information and menus. It's interesting, this third wave concept of how the web is changing all businesses. Sport Radar, a company that's here, very, very important. DraftKings, we're big investors in at Revolution. WinView, which is a company that also is in that space. And so anything around big data, Tempus, a company that basically is big data for healthcare on cancer, being able to create a panel of just hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people that can identify what are the best treatments that will give you an output of longevity and quality of life. And so it's the greatest time to be alive right now. You know, I said 25 years ago, today is the worst day the web will ever be. There'll be more people on, there'll be more investment dollars put in, there'll be more community, there'll be more infrastructure. And it has powered and changed every industry, every business, and all of the good that it's doing, unfortunately, sometimes gets drowned out by that small, loud voice.
And, will that small, loud ruin it?
No, I think that most of the big companies understand that they need more regulation, that they've become too big, and that's fair. They certainly are creating jobs, they're paying taxes, but regulation for many of these companies is the right thing. The Uber really needed to be tamed, if you will, and become part of the transportation infrastructure of the country. Drones are becoming more and more important. Well, they're going to work with the government. They're not going to be able to fly over airports and over the water. There's no industry where partnership and policy and technology come together, and all policy, all roads either lead to your state house or to the White House. And I'm hoping that we become more and more thoughtful on this intersection of the web and all these other industries. And, you know, I implore the media to talk about some of the good things that are being driven by technology, and not just what's happening on Twitter, right? Because Twitter's not the real world, but it's so real time. It's such a drug for the masses to be able to see so-and-so said this, and let's talk about that in stream of consciousness. There's a lot of great work that's going on that will enhance our lives, enhance the educational system, level the playing field for young people through education. And I tend to be an optimist, and I think most business leaders want to have a social responsibility to do the right thing.
That's Ted Leonsis. He is the king of all sports in Washington, D.C.
He's got his hands in a bunch of stuff, right?
We're going to have our full conversation with him. It went on a lot longer because we couldn't stop talking to him.
Yeah.
You can hear that next week on our Bloomberg
Extra podcast.
Including
his investments, right? Really cool stuff.
Really interesting stuff. And, you know, he even gave a shout out to our mutual alma mater, Georgetown. I'm hoping that he can help goose the results there for that basketball team as well. They play in his arena. He should have some influence over there, and he's an alum after all. Really really fun day here in Charlotte.
I'm just finishing up some of the tweets, getting them out because we got a lot of pictures. But really fabulous conversations, right? Day in and day out, we're covering, you know, your big business stories. Sports, it's a big business. NBA, it's a big business. And it's fascinating to see how they're embracing technology, how they're embracing the political environment, how they're growing their consumer base. And it's political, but it's also global. And I just think it's fascinating to hear some of these stories.
Well, and a big reminder. We were talking a little bit about this with Amy Brooks offset. The fact is that a lot of big business people, entrepreneurs, investors, they have come into this league. And as Vivek Ranadive told us, and you'll hear more of that conversation hopefully next week as well, he thought he got a steal when he bought the Sacramento Kings, and the market has so far proved him right.
He thought so when he bought the Golden State Warriors, and then when he bought Sacramento. So it's fascinating to see the value. We've had a great day. I hope you've enjoyed the last couple of hours. Have a great weekend, everyone. Check out our podcast. Carol Masser, Jason Kelly, this is Bloomberg Radio.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com. You can also listen to our radio show every weekday at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.